Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Social Impact Journal, a podcast where I talk to the founders, innovators, and experts who are driving positive change in our world. Today, I'm talking to a good friend, Michael, who is based in Nairobi, and we'll be discussing the role of technology in advancing circular economy in lower and middle income countries. I hope you enjoy the episode. And Michael, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Jack. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a real pleasure. It's a real pleasure. Yep. And I think this is a topic that we haven't covered too much on the podcast. So it's going to be pretty exciting. So let's start with a couple of quick fire questions. So you're Michael from Nairobi, Kenya, right? Yep. Who do you work for?
Yeah, thank you, Jack. So my name is Michael Kwesh. I work for Airtel Africa, which is a mobile network operator operating in 14 countries in Africa. So I've been in this technology space for a while. Our work is basically to ensure that we provide service, network, digital technology, financial inclusion in an environmentally and sustainable way across the continent.
Awesome. Next one, circular economy. And this is a term that I think a lot of people have heard, but maybe don't truly understand what it means. So how would you break down circular economy?
Thanks. So circular economy to me means not leaving anything to go to waste. So it's about delivering manufacturing products that are easy to repair. Mm. They can be used for a long time. They can be refurbished. And so ultimately, nothing goes to waste. You use it for long enough. And once it gets into the end of life, there's an opportunity to recycle and make it into a new product.
Okay, so I understand you're from Kenya. So if you look at the landscaping at home, how would you see circular economy taking place? Is it still in its early phases, or what's happening in Kenya right now in the circular economy space?
Yeah, thanks. So. So first of all, probably I need to talk about Kenya as a country. So Kenya, of course, we are in East Africa, a population of 55 million people at the moment, or thereabouts, and 30% of them live in urban centers. The growth rate for urban population, I think it's at around 4.3%. So it means by the year 2050, probably half of the population will be in the city. Yeah. Now, the key challenge is around most of this, I mean, about 50% again of those people either live in informal settlements or in the slums. And this is where, you know, services like waste management are not robust enough. Yeah. So the key thing here then is to ensure that how do we have waste or things that have been discarded, not in use, to actually be... To actually get back into the economy. Mm. And so some of the challenges that we face, I think one is we rely a lot on, especially for products, for example, so on imports. And so the quality of some of those products might not be good enough. So they might not be, I mean, in terms of design, probably not manufactured for recycling. Yeah. And some of them, you know, a lot sort of short term in terms of quality. So you don't use them for long, and also once they get into the end of life, it's difficult to recycle. So I think products generally, especially some of the imports, is one of the problem. But I think the other bigger problem is around investment in circular economy. So I think there's been less and less investment into this sector, especially on waste. We don't have enough recyclers. We don't have enough waste transporters. Segregation and general awareness is not there. And then coupled with what I've just said in terms of population, when you have a population that stays in informal settlements, then it also becomes difficult because some of those services are not available.
So just on the informal settlements, like you mentioned, you touched on public awareness and knowledge. So what needs to be done on that, on capacity building, on sensitization about the importance of recycling?
I think the way I would answer this question is to use an example of one of the actors in the informal sector. I'll call him Juma. Juma, not his real name, works in the informal sector. Mm. So his work is basically when he wakes up in the morning, he goes into a dump site, so where there is a whole pile of waste. And then what he does is actually to pick in valuables. Mm. So whether it's plastic, whether it's metal, whether it's paper or wood, that can be recycled. So anything that is, he lays his hands on. So the key challenge here is when you look at the conditions where Juma works, they are not actually the best. So in terms of health and safety, there's no protective gear. Often because he's in the informal sector, he's also not recognized. So he faces harassment from the authorities more often. And then the valuables also are sold to middle people. So middlemen who probably their prices are actually low. So in essence, when you look at the whole environment, even human rights is a challenge because they don't have access to the basic amenities like water and sanitary infrastructure. So that's the kind of a scenario in the informal sector. Now, I think there is really a need to improve these conditions. Mm. And one is, first of all, is raising awareness, you know, generally on circular economy, the principles, what can be done. There could be things like improvement in terms of segregation so that all these things doesn't have to get to the dump sites, but they can actually be segregated at source. Mm. So it makes their work more easier because you get access to products that are already sort of improved in terms of the way they're handled. There is also the connection to the market. So we have different recyclers for different waste categories. So one of the key things, challenges is actually getting the right recyclers who actually pay better prices. And all this requires sort of a system that works and also that targets the informal sector. I think there is also the role of technology in this, because technology would improve the efficiency and the way things are done, you know, especially in the informal settlement. And I think finally is around policies and regulations on waste, which needs to recognize the importance of the informal sector, give them that voice. And also the licensing that is required so that they are able to work in a decent and safe environment.
You touched on some of the education, technology and policies that are needed. But if you're going to give me a roadmap of the perfect scenario of what needs to be done to really drive circular economy in informal settlements in Kenya for people like Juma, what type of systems need to be developed? You know, the tech-enabled solutions you mentioned, you know, what needs to be developed?
So I think I would focus on probably three areas. So the role of technology, the role of finance, and now general awareness. Mm-hmm. So I think the first thing is to ensure that we have the right infrastructure for recycling, and that can allow circular economy to thrive. So I think one is there's need to do training and awareness, and technology can actually help in this. So I would give you an example. One organization called Zaidi. So this organization has developed a mobile app application that is able to connect the recyclers. It's able to connect recyclers to collectors, to transporters, and also uses information to pick, I mean, uses satellites to pick information on dump sites, like illegal areas or where waste is burning. So I think for me, the first one is to ensure that people are aware, they are trained on segregation. And then the second one is the provision of the right infrastructure. So at the moment, in a country like ours, we haven't really had robust recycling facilities. So I think there's real need to invest on that as well, so that people would get market, you know, for their products. And then And then finally is now around government giving the right incentives and mm-hmm. policies so that it allows people like Juma to actually come out, get registered, get recognized, and do their business in an environment that is safe and that respect human rights. So it's about getting them licenses, getting them the right aggregation centers in where they operate so that they don't have to travel far and wide to get the market for their products. Mm. They only need to work from, you know, their whatever place, whether it's dump sites or landfills. They take their products to recognized aggregators who would then transport them for recycling. And as I said, there is a huge opportunity for technology to be used there. Yeah. So whether it's let's say mobile SMS, for example, the use of SMSs to give out information, probably about waste and what Juma has, and then also mobile applications to get more details, data on what is available. So the different categories of waste and, you know, the actors that are there. And also for Kenya, mobile money technology is also well developed. So it can actually be used either to pay those who provide valuables or for those whose services are being offered to, actually they can use mobile money to pay the recyclers. So I think with all that, with the right technology, with the right info, with the right technology, with the awareness and capacity building on the different actors, the right investments and policies and regulations, that would sort of make a circular economy to work.
You talked about Zaidi as a tech-enabled solution that is currently operating. Is there any countries that you are picking interest from that maybe on the continent that are really leading the way in this space that you can learn from?
Yeah, so I think in Africa, when I look at Africa, we are different stages in terms of technology, and there's also strengths in different countries. So Zaidi, for example, started in Tanzania.
Okay.
And basically they have a mobile app called Zaidi, and this app sort of is used to cut different information, especially for the actors in the recycling. So if it's in an informal settlement, is able to gather the information about the waste the waste collectors, waste pickers who are there. So in terms of who they are, where they operate. Of course, taking into consideration the data protection, regulations. So, and then out of that, they are also able to know the different recyclers who can handle different waste. Mm-hmm. So they're already connected. They're also connected to the transporters. And so a good example is if I have, say, plastics as part of the valuables that a waste picker has collected, I would only go to the aggregator. So on my SMS, from my phone, I would send an SMS. Yeah. And then if it's huge quantities, they would send someone to come and collect. So because they already have my information around where I stay, the location those kind of basic information. So secondly, it also collects information on the waste or recyclables already.
The specific materials.
The materials, So it's able to give the number of kilograms, volumes that you have of the different fractions. And then it's transported, it gets into the facility.
Yeah.
So either, depending on the arrangement, it can be end of the week or end of the month, you actually get your money through mobile money. So it's sort of an end-to-end solution that starts from, you know, collection, the source, transport to the recycling facility. It's recognized by the authority, so it sort of gives comfort even to those who are in the informal sector to actually work with them.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And kind of back to awareness, like if we take recycling as a topic, from your experience, just with the general population, the knowledge of recycling, you know, what kind of level are we, and what strategies need to be used in terms of improving improving awareness? Is there ways that we can kind of change the behavior? Is it through stories? Is it through videos? Is it through social media? What strategies are being deployed right now?
I think it depends on the target audience. So if I would give an example of informal settlements, I think stories and focus group discussions would actually be more impactful. Yep. So if you are to get them and put them in a room close to where they do their work, and then out of that, have them in as groups. So there is an opportunity to have them as groups who can actually be brought together. Through different structures. So what that would do is then they will bring them together. Then now the other tactics would kick in. So if you have clips, if you have videos, if you have good practices to share, it becomes easier. And then also having their leadership got engaged. So you can do like the trainer sort of engagement, so that you have their leadership, because they normally have informal ways of managing themselves. So have them get trained, and then they will use that information to actually pass it on to the rest of their members.
Awesome.
Yeah, and then for those are the high end. The more formal sector. So use of social media. So things like Facebook, things like X now, Twitter,
TikTok.
Yeah, TikTok with short clips. I think would really be impactful.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
So moving kind of slightly away, I know November 13th. Is that correct? November 13th was National Tree Planting Day in Kenya. And this was a big thing I saw on social media. So what exactly happened on that day?
Yeah, interesting. So in Kenya, our constitution is really clear on environmental protection. Mm. So one of the clauses actually talks about a minimum of 10% tree cover or forest cover in the country. But over the years, just like in many other countries, we've seen a lot of deforestation and land degradation, related to people cutting trees, cutting forest, whether legally or illegally. Yeah. So, now with the current issues that we have on climate, we actually need to grow more trees. We need more tree cover. So National Tree Planting Day was given as a public holiday. Yeah. And one of the key things that the government wanted to achieve was one, awareness to make the citizens plant trees. And the second one was sort of to give people time and different actors, especially in government and private sector, to actually go out there, roll up their sleeves and plant trees. Mm. So what happened was the government gave seedlings. People could plant them in government forest, gazetted forest, that is. Yep. But they also encouraging them to plant in their own farms. The target for the current government is 15 billion trees in 10 years.
15 billion trees?
It's 15 billion trees in 10 years. So you can imagine. So it's about, if we are to roll it out progressively, at least 1.5 billion trees per year. And so it was sort of a rallying call to everyone to actually do their part. And I think by and large, we achieved the objectives, especially in the raising awareness, though the figures haven't been released yet. But I think we are on our way getting there. And one thing I need to mention about trees is trees actually acts for climate. It actually absorbs carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. So it's one of the carbon sinks it removes. It also improves the microclimate, attract rainfall, and the many other things that comes with trees. So it's really a very important initiative. And I can say it was impactful.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was the first year. 2023 was the first National Tree Planting Day.
Yes. So the 13th of November was actually the first holiday, national holiday that the government gave as a tree planting day.
Okay. Yeah. So slightly, you know, attached to that, I read you were in a conference in Kigali in Rwanda in 2021. I'm paraphrasing here, but you quoted that indigenous women, you know, are really at the forefront of environment conservation, and that they have the, you know, invaluable knowledge and expertise that can help build climate resilience and reduce greenhouse gases emissions. How important are local voices in climate action and involving indigenous communities?
Yeah, so the conference in Kigali is called the Mobile World Congress, organized by the GSMA. And the session where I was speaking was actually looking at the role of women, and especially women in technology in combating climate change. And the reason why I brought the issue of indigenous recognition of indigenous women, indigenous technology in climate is actually because of the role that they play. So when you look at, like in my country, some community, the indigenous communities, they used to have superb practices in terms of environmental conservation. Even without formal education, we used to have good practices on beekeeping, for example. You know, tendering their vegetable gardens using organic manure without any, you know, without any chemicals, any use of pesticides. Yeah. They also used to have, they used to have even the cultivation practices that doesn't actually cause soil erosion. So the knowledge was rich. But what has happened over the years, of course, I think there's, they have not been fully involved. And then with the coming of modernization, we've lost those kind of technologies and those kind of practices. So what I was trying to say is, even in the modern world, we need to give them space so that they share what they have. And then we package it in a way that it becomes applicable to the the current practices. Yeah. And with technology, I think that's something that can be enhanced, that can be shared as good practices widely. So the audience there were mainly women in technology, that they have a role to play. And of course, Jack, when you look at the impacts of climate, who are the most vulnerable, the most affected? It's actually indigenous women. So they need to be given a voice. They need to be given opportunity and space to talk about, you know, their practices, and also you know, educate us on what needs to be done, you know, in the modern society.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Michael, it's been a really fascinating discussion today. And if you could have your own page of a social impact journal. And I'm just looking for 5 keywords. I know you were at COP28 in Dubai. So coming into 2024 now, after that big event, and looking on the topic of circular economy, what were your key takeaways from COP28 and your key aspirations for 2024 in the circular economy space? If you can maybe have 5 keywords.
Yeah, that's a good one. So I think number one, there is need for us to have the ambition, and not only ambition, it has to be followed by climate action. So we need to work on mitigation, but more importantly for a country like ours, on adaptation and building resilience. I think that's number one. Number two is the use of technology. I think there's enormous. Yeah, technology has enormous opportunity. And then climate finance to focus different areas, and finally collaboration. Partnership. I mean, you cannot do it alone. Climate is a big, it's a big topic. It's a big issue that needs collaboration and partnership. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah,
Michael, thank you so much for joining me on the Social Impact Journal. We'll make sure to link to your social media accounts and all of the great work you're doing for our audience that want to learn more about your work.
Thank you, Jack, for the opportunity, and looking forward as well.
Thank you so much. Yeah,
thanks.
Thank you so much for watching this episode with Michael. If you did enjoy the episode, please make sure to follow and subscribe to all of our channels. And be sure to see next week's episode every Monday at 9 a.m. GMT. Thank you so much.